There are quite a few foods and crops that are pretty iconic, I think, to Wisconsin, but it would be hard to think of one with more cultural resonance than wild rice. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's wild rice season, so seemed like a good time to learn about it as a crop and also about its cultural significance. And for that, we had some help. Peter David, who is a biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, our guest today. He was also a 2012 Wetlands Award winner for his work with wild rice. And a pleasure to have him join us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Wausau. And Peter, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you back, as a matter of fact. Wild rice is—it's also called—is it Manomen, isn't it?
That's right. And Manomen comes from the Ojibwe term for the word, and that's an interesting word in itself. It's—I've seen a couple of different translations for it. The one most commonly given is for the good fruit or the good berry, but another one is for spirit food. Then there's also another term that some Ojibwe elders relate called Manitou Gitigan. And that refers to the Great Spirit's garden, and I think that's very interesting. All those, I'd leave it to the language people to sort all that out, but I think we learned something about rice from each of those definitions. But I particularly like that last one because I think it reflects the Ojibwe's belief that Manomen was a special gift from the Creator, and also that it's a plant that benefits from human intervention.
What type of plant is wild rice?
Rice is an aquatic grass, and it's not terribly closely related, actually, to the white or brown varieties of rice. It's also an annual, and that's an important thing to understand with rice, that that crop is coming up entirely from seed each year, and that drives a lot of the unique ecological attributes of it.
And I think it's pretty cool in a way that it comes, I mean, it's fairly limited area in which it grows.
That's really true. I think we're lucky here in Wisconsin to be part of the fairly small area that is the world's wild rice bowl. Northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota and adjacent parts of Canada are really the core parts of the range where this particular plant, northern wild rice, the variety we're most interested in for human harvest, that's where it grows in abundance. And so I think it's really one of those things that does make this part of the world special. And it's also something that then means that we are the global stewards of this plant here. We really can't count on people in another part of the world taking care of it. It's our responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not really cultivated, is it? It just grows wild.
Well, when I talk about wild rice, I am talking about a plant that is essentially in its nature wild. It may have been planted in some instances, and it may receive some management intervention in some cases, but it's a plant that is found in nature and grows naturally. There is actually a domesticated variety or cousin. Over about the last 50 or 60 years, there's been some efforts to domesticate wild rice, and a lot of the rice you might see, wild rice you might see in the grocery stores is actually this cultivated variety. But that's a little bit different product, really. It's genetically a little bit different. It's prepared for cooking a little bit differently, and it looks and cooks and tastes a little bit different. And it's really a different product than the true wild rice. And the one that we're focused on is this natural product that grows wild in the lakes and rivers of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I'm going to mention that we have some wild rice recipes that we posted up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you're interested in taking a look at some of those recipes, I hope you will. You kind of got at it a little bit, I think, Peter. The cultural significance for Wisconsin's native people, it's wild rice has quite a significance, does it not?
You know, it's really hard to overstate that, Larry. Most of my background comes from working with the Ojibwe, but it's worth noting that the Menominee Indians actually take their name from this plant. And to the Ojibwe, this plant has got incredible cultural significance as well, and it really goes back to their migration story. And at one time, the Ojibwe were living along the eastern seaboard, and certain prophets came to the tribe and indicated that if they were going to survive, they had to undertake a westward migration. And they didn't really know how long that trip was going to be or what their final destination was, but the prophecy indicated that they would be at their final location when they came to the place where the food grew on the water. And so after this long migration along the St. Lawrence and to the Great Lakes system and getting to the western Lake Superior region where this rice is in abundance, this plant fulfilled that prophecy. And it makes this, I think, a religious motherland in many ways to the Ojibwe. And it also gives this plant sort of a sacred status.
Yeah, it surely does. Is there a set season for the wild rice harvest?
Not in the way that we have a season, say, for deer or for turkey or for other things. It's really nature that kind of drives this. In a general sense, the season is in typically late August and early September, but depending on the weather, it can probably be pushed a week or 10 days early or late from kind of an average date. There is a group of lakes in the state where the harvest is date regulated, and on those waters, you cannot pick on them until that lake has been open for harvesting. And that harvesting date will vary a little bit from year to year depending on the season. Then there's a whole bunch of other places where really it's up to the discretion of the rice picker to decide when the rice is ready to go.
Talking today with Peter David, biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, and taking a look at wild rice from a native perspective and learning about the harvest of that plant and about the plant itself. You may have a question about it. Do you cook with wild rice? Have you ever harvested it yourself? That'd be fun to hear about. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. Typically, the harvest is done by boat. Done in boat, is it not?
Yeah, harvesting is a very, well, it's still done today in a very traditional way. Typically, two people work together in a canoe or a similar type boat, small boat. And one person is generally providing the propulsion and using either paddles or a push pole. But amongst any sort of serious ricer, the push pole is the way to go. You learn to stand in a canoe and use this long 16 to maybe even 19-foot pole that has a natural fork on the end or has a mechanical duckbill attached. And while that individual is moving the canoe through the rice beds, the knocker, the other person is in the other end of the canoe typically, and using a pair of harvesting sticks is harvesting this grain. And it's a simple process. The idea is that you basically want to intercept grain that's almost ready to fall off the plant of its own accord and basically kind of coax it into your canoe. So you use one stick to lean those stalks over the side of the canoe and the second one to sort of gently stroke across the seed heads, trying to get some of that rice to fall your way, basically. But ricers know that when you do this, you tend to plant a lot of rice. Rice tends to fly all over the place. So it's a good planting process as well as a harvesting one. And it's an interesting experience because even though you're on a lake, when you're in a good rice bed, it's almost more like being in a prairie surrounded by these tall grasses, and it's a very unique experience.
It really sounds cool. I've not yet done that, and I would like to try it sometime. Do you need a permit or?
There is a permit that's required, either a state or tribal permit. It's probably the best deal out there if you're interested in harvesting rice. The Wisconsin license right now is a 8 1/4, and that's essentially a family license. If I purchase it as a non-tribal member, my spouse or any children living at home can still rice with me. That license is needed on the state side for people 17 to 64. If you're younger or older than that, you can get by without even that small investment. The tribal permit is a free permit, but that's required for ricers of all ages.
Very, very cool. We have callers online. I want to give them a chance to join in. Again, you can reach us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. How's this year's harvest looking, by the way?
You know, it's the season is winding down pretty rapidly now, but I would say this one turned out to be a little bit of a pleasant surprise in the end. The crop overall didn't look particularly good, but it seems like where it turned out to be good, it was oftentimes very good. And the weather was pretty cooperative, which is a really important part. If you get a lot of high winds or rainstorms, it can knock a lot of that seed off the plant before harvesters get a chance to get at it. So the weather cooperated and the crop seemed to be good, and I've gotten quite a few reports of people really doing well this year, including one individual who reported harvesting a pair of ricers coming in with over 300 pounds of green, freshly harvested rice in a day. And that's pretty unheard of in Wisconsin. Yeah, a typical trip is more like 40 pounds, so they have one I think that they may never see again. Of course, that's only half the battle. You know, getting rice into your canoe is only the first half of the equation because the rice is not ready to be finished. Yeah, to be table ready, there's a whole process that has to go through called finishing the rice. So we call freshly harvested rice green, although it's not really a reference to its color, but the fact that it's fresh off the plant. But that seed is enclosed in a sheath that needs to be removed, and you really need to drive moisture out of the seed, too, to get it into a condition where you can preserve it. And that, of course, is one of the great values of rice, is that when it's properly finished, you could preserve it fairly indefinitely. Rice was the single most nutritious food available to the native diet, and so this was one you really leaned on, and you tried to put up real stores of it so that when other foods weren't available, you could lean on this one to get you through hard times. But it meant a great deal of work. The real steps of finishing traditionally involved, before European contact, it actually involved building smoking racks and drying the seed that way. After European contact, most people switched to parching it in iron kettles over a low fire. You put the rice in there, you kind of stir it constantly to drive that moisture out and to get this awn that's around the seed to dry up and become brittle. It doesn't typically separate, though, from the seed, so the next step was traditionally was to do what was called the dancing or jigging pit, and a hole was made in the ground and lined with an animal hide or with wood staves, and the rice was put in there, and a person literally sort of danced on the rice. You'd make a structure to keep most of your weight off of the grain, and you rolled your feet in a way that got these grains rolling against each other and to separate that hull. And then the final step was to literally separate the chaff from the grain. And so you'd use a broad birch bark winnowing basket, put that mixture in there, and by sort of flicking that up and down, you can create a draft that carries that light chaff away now and hopefully leaves you with this finished, nutritious product that as long as you keep it dry, you're good for months or years.
That's wonderful. And the nutritional value, is that high in vitamins? Is it...
It's high in protein and fiber and B vitamins and some micronutrients. I mean, it really is one of the best things you can put in your body overall.
Yeah, and it tastes
great. And gluten-free.
And it tastes great, too.
No argument on that.
No, absolutely not. Our guest today, Peter David, as we talk with him about wild rice here in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Robin Cherry, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking wild rice from a native perspective with Peter David, biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Sandy in Wausau has a question, so let's go to Sandy. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I am a member of the Bad River Indian Reservation and one of the Ojibwe. In our culture, we look at ourselves as stewards of this rice that we hold sacred.
Yes.
I wanted to bring light to a situation in northern Wisconsin with a GTAC mining going in the Pinoki Hills and its destruction of the Kagagan Slough and the rice beds that this would cause. The Kagagan Slough being in the Bad River Indian Reservation, the largest natural rice beds. It's a national treasure, and it's a potential destruction with this mine going in, and I wanted to bring light to your listeners of our battle up there and our fight trying to preserve this.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Sandy. Peter, a comment from you?
Well, rice can be very sensitive to this. In Minnesota, in some of the areas downstream from the mines, they talk about the dead zone in the St. Louis River, for example. Rice is particularly sensitive to sulfate levels. And in Minnesota, they have a state standard on sulfates specifically designed to protect wild rice. And we're lacking that in Wisconsin. And I think there's very, very legitimate concerns about what that mine might do to any of the rice beds that are downstream from it.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandy, for bringing that up. I want to give Dan in Milwaukee a chance to join in as well. Dan, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have access, or I get up to the Bay of Green Bay quite frequently along the western shore where it's quite shallow.
Yeah.
Two areas in particular, one where the water's knee-deep to waist-deep, but the bottom is quite sandy or fairly sandy, and another area where the water's maybe just knee-deep, but the bottom is muck, so that you sink in, to your... And I'm wondering if there's anything that could be done to encourage wild rice to grow there, or is it just too open and unsheltered?
You know, my understanding is that there was a real strong historical presence of wild rice. In fact, I've seen one reference that suggested that the name Green Bay actually comes from the abundance of vegetation that once grew along those shores, including wild rice. And there's quotes from Marquette's journal as he entered the Fox River from Green Bay, the rice beds that existed there. Rice, in a general way, it grows in about a half a foot to 3 feet of water, and you'd be looking for mucky bottomed sites. But I would think that there is probably some potential for restoration in parts of Green Bay where those conditions still exist.
Yeah.
Would you need to, the mucky area, I mean, it's quite extensive, but it's open to the west. Would you need to do something to protect the rice from wave action, or would you just need to get it started?
It's a good point that you typically need some sort of protection. High wave action, particularly when the plant is in what they call the floating leaf stage. The plant's buoyant, the roots aren't fully developed, and it can be prone to uprooting from high boat wakes or high wave action. So you might need to look for some areas that are kind of protected or outside of the prevailing winds.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you, Dan, for calling. I appreciate it. Let's give Ann a chance to join in from Madison. Ann, hi.
Hi. We have a cabin up at Endeavor on the Fox River.
Yeah.
Last year, the river level had started getting lower and is supposed to be lower till May of next year because they're doing work on the Montello Dam. But in front of our cabin, we have probably 1 to 2, maybe even more feet of muck. I mean, if you step in there before you reach solid, you are totally black.
Yeah.
Really icky. Last year, we started getting wild rice. And this year, all up and down the river on both shores, up in areas where the river is very shallow, kind of like little islands almost, there are many, many, many plants of wild rice. I mean, we have no river view anymore when we're standing on the ground in our house, in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even see the water. Our dock has kind of disappeared in. You walk in there, and it's like you're in a jungle. But when I was trying to get some of this wild rice, or kind of, gee, what's this all about? You know, I see the wild rice, and where it's ripe, it's often very grainy, like something's been eating it, and every once in a while I'd see a little tiny caterpillar. So it doesn't seem to me like anything you'd want to harvest, because you would have also that kind of protein, and it's really kind of sticky. The birds love it. but I guess I'm just, although it's lovely, it's very airy, and it's probably 8-9 feet tall, towers above us. It's taken away our river view. I don't know that we really want to keep this rice there, and I'm wondering what the prospects are of it. You just said something about up to 3 feet of water it'll grow in. is so even when the water comes back up, we'll still probably have wild rice?
Well, my hunch is that the reason you didn't have wild rice there was because of the water level earlier. And obviously, this drawdown triggered this growth. It's interesting, there's a long history of rice again on the Fox, and most of the rice on the Fox River has been lost, most of those historic beds. Mm-hmm. Now, the rice you're talking about is probably southern wild rice. It's a slightly different species than the one that we commonly are harvesting in northern Wisconsin, although it occasionally gets picked by people. That the height of it actually makes it more difficult, and the seed is tends to be smaller, actually, than the northern plant, which grows considerably shorter.
Uh-huh.
It does have tremendous value for wildlife, though, and for those reasons, all wild rice in the state is protected. You uh-huh. can apply typically for a permit from the state to if you need to, say, open a navigational access or something like that. That being said, my hunch is that when those water levels return to the level that they were at previously, this rice probably will decline considerably. And it's interesting that it popped up the way it did when the river was drawn down, because it suggests there was a remnant seed bank there from perhaps quite a long time ago. But it just may kind of drop back into that kind of a dormancy stage until the right conditions come back again.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you'd be amazed to go along the river there. I mean, you cannot see the shore if you're on the river, and you can't see the water if you're standing on the ground.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and it's when you get a little grain, it's very long and thin, as you said, and it's got like a little tail. You know, I suppose that's where it's attached to the stalk. So it just would seem very weird to try to harvest that.
Yeah. It's actually attached at the other end, and that tail is actually apparently helps drive the seed into the sediment to plant it, essentially. You mentioned the little the caterpillars. This you might have been referring to rice worms, which is a small white moth larvae. And in full disclosure, I should say harvesting wild rice definitely has a little bit of a heebie-jeebie factor to it. When you harvest rice, you harvest spiders, you harvest these little rice worms typically, and maybe a few other things too, you know, and it's all stuff that comes out in the finishing process in the end.
Yeah, these caterpillars were green.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So, well, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Anne, for calling. And it sounds like when the river returns to normal levels, the wild rice that you have may be returning back to a seed bed, and maybe nothing there again. Dave in Dunn, thank you for calling. By the way, if you'd like to join in, we have open lines at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, talking about wild rice here in Wisconsin with Peter David of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Dave and Don, thank you for calling.
Hello. Personally, given the choice between having a shoreline obscured, I'll pick wild rice over boat docks, jet skis, and piers every time, but that's not why I called. The Ojibwe have a ceremony for wild rice. They have special sticks that they've used for that purpose. And after it's harvested, they have a ceremony where a pit is dug in the ground, and a clean deer skin is thrown over that pit, and a young brave is chosen to put on a special pair of moccasins used only for that purpose. And they have a special dance. The Ojibwe have a dance for just about everything, and he does a dance on this wild rice that they put in that pit. That it's very specific, and it separates the wheat from the chaff. And if you're lucky enough to ever witness that, you would really enjoy it. And you can go through a wild rice bed and harvest it the way they do, with a guy in the back and usually the wife in the front or the kids or whatever, and harvest it and come by a couple days later, and the rice that was not ready for picking at that day might be ready 2 or 3 days later. And it is just a precious, very valuable resource that's very fragile, that should be protected at all costs.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. Peter, comment?
Well, he brings up a real good point that rice, he brings up several good points, but one I'll add on from a biological perspective is that this plant, it does mature gradually over a 2 or 3 week period. And so you do want to harvest with care, because you want to preserve this opportunity to come back a couple days later and harvest it again, almost like a strawberry patch. So that is something you want to do. And for people who are interested in this, Glyphwick recently put out a new brochure called Harvesting Wild Rice in a Good Way, and it's really targeted for people who are interested in harvesting but don't have a lot of experience doing it, and give you some sense about how to go about doing this so that you become a steward of the resource while you're harvesting.
Our guest, Peter David, today, a biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, talking about wild rice. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. What are the threats to Wisconsin's wild rice that we should be aware of?
Well, you know, historically, rice has faced a lot of different threats. And the biggest one has already come up here, and that's changes to hydrology. I mean, it's sort of interesting. That last discussion, we talked about, well, when the water level returns to normal, that rice might disappear. But in fact, the condition we think of as normal is probably the abnormal condition. It's being affected by a dam, so the hydrology of that system has been changed. And hydrological changes have probably been the biggest threat over time. Today, things like heavy lakeshore development, bigger and bigger boats out there all the time, more and more impacts from invasive species, and some of those are aquatic plants, some of them are species like carp. And then, you know, one of the big ones, I think, that's looming on the landscape right now is climate change related. Almost every scenario for climate change brings about things that are not good for wild rice. And I mentioned the name of the common name being northern wild rice. This is a plant that grows under sort of northern hardy conditions. And a increased mildness of the climate is a problem. The heavy rainfall events that we're getting more and more frequently nowadays is a growing problem. And we're also seeing a thing called a brown spot disease, which is a fungal disease that can affect wild rice. It's been around for a long time, but its prevalence seems to be increasing a lot, and it's associated with warm, wet summer conditions. So rice definitely has some challenges in front of it.
Yeah, for sure. Mike in Shell Lake, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Peter. I just wanted to make one comment. I'm not native, however, I have a great deal of respect for the native views on wild rice and how it brought our Ojibwe people to the Upper Great Lakes region originally. It's such an incredible resource we have out there. Not a lot of people know much about it, but I think societies have a tendency to preserve what they know and what they cherish. So even if people aren't out there knocking rice on an annual basis, they know the history, the value to the people, the value to wildlife, to the environment, taking up nutrients in the water and so forth. I think that's all good, and people will work to preserve it more. That being said, the issue in Clam Lake, Burnett County, Peter, I know they've been doing some studies over there and the impacts of the carp there. I wonder if you had any update on what's going on there.
Well, the Clam Lake that he speaks of is in Burnett County, and it's really an interesting story. It was, for many years, the most heavily harvested wild rice water in the state, with up to 300 acres of rice in a good year. And then we lost it. That bed disappeared literally from one year to the next and didn't return. Mm. And as people got in and tried to look at this, and the St. Croix tribe has really been the lead on the restoration effort there, it looks like the short story is that we think the bluegill died. And that turned out to be significant because bluegill are very effective predators on carp eggs. So the bluegills died. The carp had a super recruitment year. And when those carp reached the size of being 2 or 3 years old, they really had a tremendous negative impact on their rice bed. Now, there's one bay on that lake that's most of it is hidden behind an island. And the tribe has taken the lead in putting nets up to exclude carp out of that particular bay. For the last 3 years, and we've seen a really substantial recovery of rice in that bay, but not in the other parts of the lake yet.
Mm.
The tribe is working also to do some large-scale carp removal, working with Wisconsin DNR, with us and with the Lake Association, with other people who have an interest in bringing it back, because it is such a valuable resource, not just to the human harvesters, but to all the wildlife species that utilize it.
And we don't know why the bluegill were lost, or...
That's kind of conjecture. I think there's been some thought that it may have been a winter kill activity, or it may have been related to a disease outbreak. But it really is interesting because carp have been present in that system for decades, but we never had quite this impact all come together at once.
Mm.
One question on that carp. I know there were a couple of really good year classes there. And intuitively or anecdotally, I can't help but believe that the early springs, later autumns, little minuscule increases in temperature may have, and we're going right back to this climate change, presented an opportunity for these very good year classes and hatches to come on. So again, the climate change issue, I think, is affecting things in many different ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. I love rice. You guys are doing a great job. Get out there and get to know the resource.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you very much for calling.
Midwich.
Yeah. Bill in Heartland. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Excellent program. Just was wondering, and I might have missed this earlier because I didn't hear the whole program, but where can you purchase this wild rice that's grown in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota in the Milwaukee area?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good question that I don't have a good answer for. There are places I know online that you can track it down. And the point I would make is that you really try to look for real wild rice. Now, you know, taste is obviously a personal thing, and you may find that you like the cultivated very much, but I think until you've had real wild rice, you haven't had the real McCoy. And there are places, White Earth Reservation, their land recovery program, I know, sells it online, and there are some other sources, but I'm not aware of one in Milwaukee myself.
Mm. And
well, okay, well, thank you. I'll definitely look online.
Yeah, and give us the name of that online source again.
The White Earth Land Recovery Program on the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota is one that I do know of, sells online.
White Earth Land Recovery.
Right.
Okay. We might try to get that. Robin, maybe we can put that up on our Facebook page so people can have access to it. The next caller is David from Junction City. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've got some property near Junction City, and I had a pond dug. It's a wildlife scrape type pond, and I'm wondering how I can test for the suitability of planting wild rice on that pond, and if there's anybody on the faculty at the university in Stevens Point that would be able to help me with that. I also do some dog training, and just in a related story, I was training some of my dogs over in the Wisconsin Rapids or Nakusa area, and at a cranberry bog, and the bog owners had dug some ponds just recently, and the wild rice took off and grew in those ponds, and they hadn't planted it. I wonder how that seed, or if that seed was in the soil there from, you know, many years ago and just was exposed and started to grow, but it had filled in those ponds quite nicely, actually.
Hmm.
A quick response on the planting. There's a lot of people who are always interested in planting this rice for all of the, especially the wildlife benefits it provides. And one thing you could do is contact me. We have seeding guidelines that we've developed. We plant a lot of rice ourselves and work with other cooperative agencies to do that. So we have guidelines that we recommend. One thing you do need is flowing water. You need some flow through that system. Your anecdote is an interesting one, and it's interesting because rice naturally has actually a very limited dispersal ability. So it may be that if there was a river upstream that went through those flowages, that the rice was carried in that way. Or there's a surprising amount of this stuff still getting moved around by people in a regular way, waterfowl hunters and those kinds of folks who have an interest in it.
Hmm.
The other thing I was wondering is the Bad River area that is under threat of the mine development, what percentage of the total area that's sustainable for, or that's suitable for rice production, what do you know what percentage that area would come to?
I don't have a good figure for you on that. I would anticipate anything in that watershed is potentially at some risk, depending on a lot of potential variables and how they play out. But that sulfate level alone could be a very important one. Changes to hydrology could have impacts as well.
And do you know, in terms of the total area suitable for wild rice production, or that is in wild rice production, what percentage the Bad River area might be in relation to the total area that's out there?
Well, the beds in the Kakagan Slough are certainly some of the most significant ones in Wisconsin. In fact, the location of the reservation there was probably influenced by the presence of those beds. You know, it's interesting, you look at a state highway map today, and some of those lines on there were influenced by where these beds were, because it was so important that tribal members have access to them. And in all of Wisconsin, we've got only maybe 5,000 or 6,000 acres of rice. And so that makes every acre pretty precious.
Thank you very much, David, for calling. Appreciate it. What are your favorite ways to, or do you have a favorite way of enjoying wild rice?
Boy, not only is this one of the best things you can put in your body, but there's 100 different ways you can do it. My family's been eating rice now for about 25 years, and we certainly have some favorite recipes, but we're trying new things all the time. And it's great in salads and soups and casseroles and stuffings. You can add it to hamburgers or pancakes or muffins. I mean, it really is endless. It's strong enough to be a main course. It makes all kinds of great side dishes. I once got a great invitation to give a talk at a gourmet restaurant that served a six-course meal that had wild rice in every course, including the dessert. And it was wonderful.
Oh.
I think on the website, a couple of recipes that were provided there, a couple came from Glyphwick, and they're related to a program that we have to really encourage nutrition and the diet and going back to native foods. So there's a wild rice fruit salad in there that has blueberries and cranberries and flavored with maple syrup. It's just delicious. I also threw in one of my favorites, a recipe that I got from my sister that's very non-traditional. It has olive oil and black olives and tomatoes and cheese and onion and makes a casserole that's just wonderful. So you're really limited only by your imagination.
Well, I tell you what, we've got some of those recipes up on my Facebook page. So, Peter, I'm really glad that you were able to take the time to be with us today. It was a lot of fun, and I hope we have a chance to do it again.
It was a real pleasure, Leigh. I appreciate it very much. And say hello to your next guest, Patty Lowe, as a friend. And I'm sure your listeners will appreciate her very much.
Okay. Peter David, biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. He was the 2012 Wetlands Award winner for his work on wild rice, as a matter of fact. And a good friend of our next guest, who's coming up here, Patty Lowe, will be talking with us about the second edition of her book, which is just a fascinating book. It's called Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance and Renewal. And that's coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.